Listeners, it is a new year. I have a new headset. We have a new plague that is sweeping the planet. And we have some new updates to the Free Folk and the Night's Watch. Today, I was going to talk about the changes that are going to be happening to the Night's Watch overall. But since we still have a little bit before that update comes out and a couple more spoiler articles and kind of tactical articles coming out in that meantime, today I'm just going to focus on one we've already shown, and that is going to be Jor Mormont, the 997th Lord Commander. So Jor is actually one of my favorite characters in the setting. Him and Barristan Selmy immediately come to mind. I guess I just have that, like, that old grizzled, you know, Clint Eastwood, too old for this type of shit, you know, type of aesthetic and archetype. I really dig that. Plus, Jor is probably my favorite sculpt in the entire Night's Watch, and one of my favorite sculpts in the game. I can't think of any offhand that really jump in front of him, except the Targaryen Barristan Selmy, actually. Just that armor looks amazing. So, we recently updated Jor in the tail end of the 1.5 Night's Watch Free Folk update, which technically has not come out at the time of this recording, but we have spoiled what he does, so we can go ahead and talk about him. This is going to get a little tricky because I am going to discuss some things and some elements that theoretically have not been released or talked about yet, and I'm not going to really give any specifics there because, you know, as I said before, we have, you know, spoilers and articles and all those things coming out. Plus, we want to save some surprises for the actual release date. What we can talk about, though, is Jor, the ideas behind him, his kind of tactical approach to how he used to play and how he currently plays. Jor, how he used to, had the ability Oath of the Black, which was when the unit activates, it may discard an attached vow tactic card and replace it with a different vow tactic card from your discard pile. This was meant to give him an element of kind of cycling. The issue is that it didn't really work in practicality because, well, if your vows were in your discard pile, that usually meant that they were attached to a unit at some point, and that unit got killed, which means that you probably don't have a unit, you know, to just start cycling those cards back onto. And it just wasn't really that impactful. So that was a really big strike against Jor, because when you have a field commander, you want them to have a really cool effect. Jor's tactics cards, I actually really like, and we're going to go over those, of course. But that's something I feel that people would look at his attachment version, and just kind of, okay, this ability is not super useful after trying it, and then they would pitch him to the side. And, yeah, okay, rightly so, that's why we changed him, is because, you know, he wasn't seeing a lot of play. His tactics cards were never one of the issues, though, because, frankly, there's a lot of them that really scare me, and I think that they bring a wealth of utility to what Jor does. But now, we have the new version of Jor, which he conveys Stalwart to his unit, which gives them +2 to their morale test rolls. And then he gives them his unique ability, where they can count, they can have 2 attached vows, and they always count as controlling all tactic zones for the purposes of those vows. So, as you can see here, one of the efforts for Jor was to really push him in that territory of he is the vow commander. You know, he's the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. He's the one that takes this the most seriously. He's the one that's going to keep all these, you know, convicts and thieves and everyone in line. So he is has to be the epitome of what the Watch represents. The unit that he is in should embody that as well. So they are going to become just a juggernaut unit on the battlefield. In our spoiler article, we discussed that they are going to function similar to like the Kingsguard. And that is true in the fact that they're going to create this big focal point on the battlefield that you cannot ignore this unit. Otherwise, it is going to do terrible things to them. So let's start by actually thinking about what unit would be the best to put Jor in. We actually have a lot of options. So the obvious one that a lot of people are going to immediately gravitate toward are Veterans of the Watch. Just because you're going to take a unit that's already tanky with a 3+ defense save and a 5+ morale, and you're going to further them by giving them a 3+ defense save and then a 3+ morale. They're going to become a juggernaut. And then you have, you know, Jor's innate ability, his ability where, you know, he's going to allow you to always constantly trigger vows. Immediately everyone goes, oh my god, I'm throwing Sword in the Darkness and the Shield of the Realms of Men on this unit, and they're going to roll +2 attack dice, and I'm going to get D3 automatic blocks just perpetually at all times, and oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And yes, that is a very scary concept, the defensive aspect, especially for the veterans. But the thing is with the veterans is that when you throw all that on them, yeah, they're going to become nigh unkillable, and that's great. But they were already pretty hard to take down before. They were one of the more defensive options that the Watch has available to them. So here you're really doubling down on what they're already good at. There's nothing wrong with that at all. If that's an option you want to take, you're going to have a unit that is just going to be a supreme bunker for objective control, and basically no one's going to be able to get you off of it. It's going to take just a disproportional amount of effort to try to destroy you. The other unit that you can consider sticking them in is just your vanilla unit of Sworn Brothers. This is actually where I kind of gravitate toward, just because the Sworn Brothers, they have a 4+ and then a 6+ morale. This is going to drop them down to a 4+, 4+, which, while not as good as the vets, is still some pretty respectable defensive stats. They also, though, have the offensive capabilities by having Sundering and Critical Blow. So you have a unit here that has very solid defense, but also can lay out just a ton of damage. So, and then also combining this further with the two vows again, this is something else that's going to help mitigate them. I believe that the shields on them is more beneficial than it is onto the veterans, just in the long run, as far as like not necessarily survivability, but just all around use. The Sword in the Darkness is compounded better on these guys because they've got Critical Blow, they've got Sundering, and you're rolling two extra dice, so therefore more chances to trigger Critical Blow, and Sundering is just in general good. Your other option, your mainstay that you can put them on, is going to be Ranger Hunters. This is going to be a bit of a unique thing just because you're going to really lean into heavy with the vows here, and the tactical approach those bring. I don't want to talk about them too much because pretty much every unit aside from the Sworn Brothers and the Veterans is going to fall in that category of it's really going to kind of tailor to your vow usage. But that's the next topic I want to talk about specifically when we're dealing with Jor. Is that so many people are going to get hung up on, I want to get swords, I want to get shields on these guys. And that is really limiting the raw versatility that Jor is bringing to you. If there's one thing to take away from this talk, it's that don't shoehorn yourself into thinking that there's an optimal situation for having, these specific vows on this unit. Yes, it's always enticing to go, oh, this unit blocks D3 hits. Oh, this unit's getting extra attack dice. But keep in mind, you're able to trigger all of your secondary vow effects at any time you want with this unit. And you can switch out those vows however way you want, as you draw them and everything. And Jor's going to give you the tools and opportunities to do that. So that's really something to consider, is that I sense that a lot of people are going to just every single game, they're going to try to apply the same strategy for that unit every single time. And that's just limiting the potential that you have with this army. So let's go through the vows right quick, just to give people a refresher on their, primary and their secondary effects and their impact when you're factoring Jor into the equation. So you have Sword in the Darkness. This is your most basic one. You play it, the defender becomes vulnerable. While you control the combat zone, the unit rolls plus two dice on melee attacks. Okay? This is a universally useful ability for every unit in your army, but especially ones that have attack keywords. So that's why, the Sworn Brothers to me come into play so often. This is also going to give the veterans just a huge amount of sustained dice at all times. I mean, no one's really going to argue that extra dice in any situation when you're attacking is going to be a bad thing or somehow not going to be good. So that's just kind of a general thing. It's a decent one to always have. Next one, though, is the Watcher on the Wall. So this is when you, after friendly units attacked, you get a free maneuver or march action, but its secondary effect is if you control the maneuver zone, they gain plus one speed and may perform a free retreat action if they begin their activation engaged. If you stick this on Jor's unit, it means that they're, well, first off, they're going to be faster, but they're always, always going to be able to retreat. They're never going to get locked out in combat. Okay, now, this means that they can jet around the battlefield wherever they want, but more importantly, it means that any time that they activate, they're going to be able to retreat and be able to charge right back into their opponent if they so choose. So this means that every time that this unit activates, barring nothing, insane happens to you, you should be able to get that charge bonus in and be able to reroll attack dice. Okay? This is a huge benefit. This is especially good on something like Sworn Brothers, who you want to use that reroll to, potentially trigger extra critical blow or some potential other units. But okay, anyway, point is, any unit that really likes charging and gains benefits from doing so, like he and even looking at the Ranger Hunters, if their Swift Strike ability where they can charge in, retreat, reposition themselves and everything, this is just a huge benefit to them. And also, again, you're getting your plus one speed. So this can really lead to some surprising actions to help you just use this unit to jet across the battlefield. Because note that this is not their action for the turn. It's not just you're retreating back. Otherwise, you know, what would be the point? They're getting plus one movement, and then there's still a free retreat, which means they can move upwards of, you know, 6 inches plus their speed and everything, and then still, you know, march, maneuver, reposition themselves. This allows you to basically just be anywhere you need to on the battlefield, so do not neglect it. The next one, which I feel people overlook, and it's probably my favorite one, is actually the fire that burns against the cold. The secondary effect of that is that when the unit activates, you may place a condition token on enemy within long range, and usually you would pitch it after that point if you don't have the crown zone, but hey, you perpetually have these all. So this means that every time this unit activates, it's going to be able to put any condition token that you want on an enemy within long range. This turns this unit into basically a super version of Ranger Trackers. So, you know, you need to make something vulnerable to, you know, start kicking their ass. Okay, do that. You need to make something weakened because, say, you've put Jor into a more fragile unit like the Ranger Hunters, or you want to make them, you know, the enemy weakened to, like, just, you know, survive even that much longer with your veterans, then use this. This is actually probably my favorite vow that I would put on them, just because of the raw versatility it brings. Now, if you've listened to a lot of my army lists and things like that, I'm a big fan of just, like, tactical malleability and versatility when it comes to, you know, your abilities and how you approach the game. That's one of the reasons, you know, I like the Watch as a faction, is they've basically got a toolbox that they can use to kind of fix any situation. Now, of course, if your favorite tool in that box is a hammer, you can absolutely use that all the time. But keep in mind, you have other stuff in there other than that hammer. So that's just, you know, a personal playstyle thing, but I really do feel that this is an often overlooked vow, and especially in a situation where I can activate it every single time I want. You know, that is one that I really feel is strong in this list anytime you're running Jor. Next one we have is the Horn That Wakes the Sleepers. At any time while you control the Wealth zone, you can discard this vow to attach one vow tactic card from your hand or discard pile to this unit. So this was another one of those cards that kind of lessened the impact of Jor's ability, because you had a generic tactics card in your deck that essentially gave you his same ability, and it came up usually about just as much. Because again, to have vows in your discard pile that you didn't equip or something, that usually meant something has gone wrong. So this was another reason as to why, you know, his ability was retooled and everything. Finally, you have the Shield of the Realms of Men, which is, you know, while you control Wealth, each time this unit is attacked, I'll make you block D3 hits. Again, probably the most known vow, because it's probably the most frustrating for a lot of opponents, because, okay, getting hit by extra attack dice, there's lots of things that do that. There's not a lot of things that actually, like, will give you extra defense. So when you're trying to hammer your way through a Night's Watch unit, and it is blocking hits and then potentially healing up with, you know, Aemon or John or their other options, this one can be super frustrating to deal with. And anything that's frustrating, that's what makes players remember it. So, you know, this is one of the ones that, you know, people view as like, oh, this is the staple one. And yes, it's a very good one, because defense, you know, keeping yourself alive means that you're not dead, which means that you can keep attacking. But, as I said, it really depends on the situation. I feel that veterans, they benefit from this because of their counterattack ability. I feel that most every other unit benefits from it more, just because with the veterans, you're stacking what they already do well on top of itself, whereas the other units, you're actually giving them something that they kind of need a boost in a lot of times, to, you know, you're shoring up your weaknesses there. So let's look at Jor's specific tactics cards here. First one you have is Night Gathers. Start of any turn, search your tactics deck for any one tactics card with the vow keyword attached to a friendly Night's Watch unit. If you target Jor or Mormont's unit, they also restore up to D3 wounds. So that gives you a bit of healing. This gives you a little bit of tactical flexibility. The thing is, if you are a player that runs heavy like Bowen and really likes cycling Horn That Wakes the Sleepers to let you give extra draw, that card probably doesn't seem super appealing to you. But what that opens up the option here is that you don't necessarily have to run those things or hope that you get those cards in order for this to be effective. This allows you to search and, you know, pull out that vow card anytime you want. And, you know, again, we're talking tactical flexibility here, which is supposed to be Jor's mainstay kind of idea that you have here. Next card we have for him is Duty to the Watch. When a friendly unit makes a morale test, you may roll an additional die and discard the lowest result. And this is a vow once equipped. This unit may discard this vow if it would fail a morale test to automatically pass that test instead. This is one of the few options that the Watch has to mitigate any type of effect that is targeting their morale, or panic or anything like that. Other than that, that's one of their weaknesses in the faction, is they just don't really have a lot of things that are going to help that. Jor here is going to immediately give you something that is going to be able to fix that. In addition to that, this is something that you can, search out with the horn that wakes the sweeper. God, I'm going to mess that up. The horn that wakes the sweepers. Yes, obviously. The horn that wakes the sleepers. This is something you can search out depending on the opponent you're playing. If you're placing, a Bolton heavy panic list or a Lannister list of, featuring a lot of Lannister supremacy or something like that, this is one that's going to give you that, option to mitigate that. It's one of the few things that's going to be available in the entirety of the watch. This also allows you to, run conscripts with a little bit more ease right here, because, they're not the most brave men in the world. So having something to mitigate that morale of 7, that's going to help you out here. It's going to give you some extra activations for very low, cheap cost. The last Jor card we have is Unwavering Conviction. When a friendly unit with an attached vow attacks, the opponent may not play tactics cards the rest of the turn, and your unit may use its highest attack die value. Once the attack is completed, discard any vows attached to that unit. So this is going to be a card that you're going to want to save for clutch plays, because this is basically the Night's Watch equivalent of Winter is Coming, because you're going to be able to shut down, your opponent from trying any sneaky stuff on you or anything, and, just absolutely not have to worry about that when you're going in for your big play. The issue is that you're going to pitch all of your vow cards off of here, but let's talk about some of the specific timings here, because this card is actually better in the mid to early game when you really haven't equipped that many vows. Specifically here, because, theoretically, in an ideal setting, you would play this card when they have just, let's say, when you have something like Duty to the Watch or the Horn that Wakes the Sweet. Oh my god. The horn that wakes the sleepers. You know what? We're just going to call it the horn from here on. Okay, I'm not going through this over and over again. When you have something like that, to pitch that off or whatnot, and then you're going to immediately just replay out your Sword in the Darkness or, another card, really sword, just to get yourself that quip bonus back on there. So to mitigate the drawbacks of this. And then, of course, you could always have, like a clutch horn card or something to, pull cards back out after you've discarded them. So it's all about setup here. This is not a card that you can just throw out there anytime you want. You're going to need to save it and think about, okay, when is this going to be the most appropriate time for me to play this card out and, gain the absolute benefits for it. So that's going over some of Jor, his tactics cards, his abilities that he has here. Let's talk about the Night's Watch units and really what's going to synergize the best of what he brings to the table. So the first thing we would look at is like War Machines. War Machines are kind of out just because you can bring like a scorpion or a catapult or something that's going to, help mitigate you a little bit. But Jor really is, about helping you shuffle those vows around. And while actually a scorpion with the Watcher on the Wall is pretty neat and everything, it's still not really synergizing too much with Jor. Really, Jor likes playing around with, the Watch Captains and his own, self-buff ability here. So, that's something to consider. But frankly, when it comes to like Jor, I'm not going to throw in a bunch of War Machines. Jor really likes just a kind of a core of, the things that the core Night's Watch tenements. You take your Sworn Brothers, your Ranger Hunters, your Veterans, your Conscripts. Jor, to me, actually really does like Conscripts because they're a cheap little option. He has, the ability to combine himself with some Watch Captains to, give them some vow abilities and synergies. And he is going to have one of the only options in the entire faction to mitigate their morale a bit outside of some key attachments. But really, the thing about Jor is that he brings versatility to your army. So whereas Donald Noy is going to want to build a defensive army, whereas Othel Yarik is going to want to build a super offensive army, and Alistair Thorne is Alistair, I keep adding a T in there. Whereas Alistair is going to bring in, again, kind of an offense focusing on just debuffing the enemy and some tricky plays and everything, Jor is just a very well-rounded option. He can manipulate the battlefield via just the presence that his own unit brings to the table, and deciding what, unit he's actually going to be in further changes their role. And you're going to have that tactical flexibility that he brings. So that's really the key thing to remember with him, is just being flexible. He is going to allow you to have a solution whenever you really need it, really focusing around his unit. So that's the thing, is that while he does bring flexibility to your army, the one constant is that Jor is going to be at the center of it, usually making whatever like key plays you have happen. This is again why I'm a fan of putting him in Sworn Brothers, is that while the survivability is a little bit lower, I feel their impact is that much higher. You stick him in a unit of vets, again, they're not going to die, but they're still just going to kind of be there grinding away at one thing for probably the entirety of the game. Depending on the game mode you're playing, that's exactly what you might want. But, I just prefer having a mixed unit where I'd give up a little bit of survivability in favor of just some extra defense, or sorry, not defense, offensive capabilities, hence why I like sticking him in Sworn Brothers. So, to me, Jor is also heavily impacted by your NCU options. And this is the part where we're going to get into it, where it's going to be a little difficult to talk about, just because we're going to start talking about changes that are coming up that I really don't want to get into. But I guess, hey, if you've listened this far, then you deserve a little bit of spoilers since we're 20 minutes in. So, if you've stuck with it so far, congrats. You will get a small little peek ahead of people, probably about a week or so, ahead. Nothing specific, though, so that might frustrate you, but hey, I never said I was going to give you anything. So talking about NCUs for the Watch, you have several routes you want to take, and again, this is just depending on your playstyle. If you want to have more offensive-focused units in Jor's army, so let's say you want to run Ranger Hunters and Sworn Brothers, and you really don't care too much about the defensive nature of like veterans or something like that, then you can actually run Donald Noy as your 4-point NCU. His new effects and everything are all based around just boosting the defense of units. So therefore, you can choose to run some of those units that, might be a little squishier than you might like, and this is going to help you mitigate that. Conversely, you could also just run the full tank build of, I'm just going to run a bunch of veterans, Jor, and just stick down some Watch captains in there, and you know what? My army's going to be damn unkillable. Okay, if you want to take that approach, that's fine as well. You can run Donald in there and just really make those guys not killable, or you could throw another option like Horn Halfhand, who's going to be able to increase the offensive capabilities of your units, and also, things of that nature. Othel is, of course, off the table because he is an NCU commander, so not going to be able to run anything there, but, you have that option. You want to run some healing aspects. You have Aemon. You also have, Tycho from neutrals. You have Craster if you want to run some extra, mixture of healing and card draw. And then you have Bowen if you just want to get straight up more card draw. So, you have those options built in there as well. And then, of course, we get down to the attachments. And, it's really hard to just throw a list out here to talk about because, again, you're talking about one of the most flexible option or commanders in the Watch. So really, it's about picking the style of play that you want to run, and then using Jor to augment that. So when it comes to the attachments, like so many things in the Watch, they're helping you determine what role do you want this unit to have, and do you want to further what they're good at, or do you want to give them a secondary kind of benefit here, which I've kind of talked about before, the whole like subclass thing where you've got your offense, defense, and your mobility aspects of the Watch. And then you can augment that via your attachments or your NCUs. You're kind of seeing that a little more. So like if I want to take veterans, I can stick Grin in with them to give them critical blow and plus one die to give them an offensive punch. I can take, Piper into some other units to give them more mobility, and those type of options. If I want a unit that's just going to be like, how dare you try to hit me, I'm going to hit you back even harder and just punish you for coming at me, I can take Quarren and stick him in there. So it's really about what playstyle do you want your primary army to function with, and then how do you want to support that playstyle. Jor is going to give you the options to build almost anything you want and really just accentuate, those options, taking them to 11. So as I mentioned before, I like building things that are kind of well-rounded. Especially when I'm given the option here, if I'm going to run like, Donald, that's going to be a tanky, just like turtled up army. If I'm going to run pure offense, say with, Othel, then I'm going to go full in on that. But here, since I've got the ability to kind of adapt to my situation, that's the list that I've kind of built around. So what I've done is I've started with my core unit, which is the one that Jor is going to go into. I've just stuck him in a unit of Sworn Brothers. I've explained to you why. I really like the versatility that he offers with them, and they still maintain the offensive punch. I then have a second unit of Sworn Brothers led by a Watch Captain, just because, again, we're manipulating a lot of vows here, And I want that aspect to come into play. The other thing as well is that by running watch captains and having Jor as my primary guys, it actually frees me up a lot of the constraints from the tactics board. I don't have to worry too much about the zones that I'm claiming. Therefore, I can really just focus on what do I want my secondary NCUs to actually bring for their abilities without having to worry so much of like, man, I've got to claim the crown. Okay, I've got to claim the wealth zone here to get my effects. I'm just kind of mitigating that. Now I wanted to bulk up my army a little bit, so I've added in 2 units of vanilla conscripts. Now, this is another option here that kind of pushes you in one direction because you have the conscripts, which naturally want the wealth zone. You can actually lean really heavy into that when you're playing Night's Watch, but especially with Jor, to really like double down on that, gain the effects of, like, okay, I want to claim the wealth. If my opponent doesn't go other way to claim it, then I'm just going to be a terror on the battlefield. That would be an army, like if I'm running, conscripts and say, Stormcrow lieutenants spread across my army to give me +1 die and sundering, in which case I'm probably not going to be running too many Sworn Brothers. That's a situation where I'd be running more Ranger Hunters or more veterans. Specifically Ranger Hunters in that situation because the bonuses from the Stormcrow Lieutenant give them an extra die and sundering on all their attacks, so you would have that on their both their melee and ranged attacks. But that's an entirely separate army. That's entirely separate talk. Although, conversely, talking about Ranger Hunters, I am running a unit of them in this army with Piper, aka the Monkey, which is a staggeringly expensive 10-point unit. But frankly, they are damn terrifying with what they bring to the table here. Now, I am specifically talking about post-rework Ranger Hunters. And, oh, I know a bunch of people just probably perked up there. Ooh, would you like to know more? Sure, I can talk to you a little bit about them. But, well, I'm not going to give any spoilers away. Well, okay. You know what? Since you guys stuck around, I'll talk about some spoilers. Don't tell anyone I didn't do anything for you, though. Since I'm going to use this as my New Year's gift, slash, we might be facing, the next Black Plague in a few months, gift for you guys. So, Ranger Hunters are one of the units that we are looking at with the updates. And the thing is that we made a very conscious decision. We didn't want to lower the points cost of any units. So if you're listening, you might have just experienced a small little audio glitch right there. That was kind of funny, almost like God himself reached down and just tried to stop me talking about spoilers, because literally my headset just completely shut off and would not want to operate there the second I started talking about this. So maybe I should take that as a sign and just not talk about any of this. Huh. Well, no, it wouldn't be the first time I've gotten into a fight if a supernatural being come out on top. So let's go ahead and talk about some Ranger Hunters here. So, as I mentioned, this is one of the units that were updated, and I don't know if this was caught that this is one of the units, sorry, the general design philosophy behind doing the Night's Watch updates is that we didn't want to adjust point cost where we could. We just wanted to tweak the units. And that's kind of the overarching thing of 1.5, but it was doubly so when talking about the Night's Watch. So this is the change that has happened to Ranger Hunters. They basically stayed the same in all ways. They still have their same attack profiles, same defense, same movement, but they have lost Opportunist. So that's out, that's gone. Okay? Namely because keeping that on with the other addition we did was kind of nuts, and also it was just a lot of effects. Instead, they have now gained Order Quickfire, which is the same thing the Kranigman Trackers had. Which, for those who don't know, after this unit completes a maneuver or retreat action, this unit will make one free ranged attack action. All right, cool. I mean, neat. So that means these guys can, move up their 6 inches. They can then activate Quickfire because they just completed a maneuver. Allow them to shift another 2 inches and then make a free range attack. That's really neat that you can just kind of jump up in the flanks right there and then immediately shoot someone. Except they also have Swift Strike, and this is where things get silly. Because they've basically been turned into reverse bastard scrolls. So, if Swift Strike, after you've completed a melee attack, they can retreat for free if they are engaged. So, that means that you can charge into a unit if you're speed 6, make your attack with Swift Strike, and then you're going to retreat out, and then you're going to be able to trigger Order Quickfire and allow it to make a ranged attack. Isn't that cool? So now the opponent's going to have a very difficult decision here. If they don't turn to face you, they're going to get hit in the flank of a range attack. If they do turn to face you, okay, now they're facing away from, the rest of the battle lines here and can potentially just get flank charged by something else. So this opens up the ability for the Ranger Hunters to really disrupt the enemy battle lines severely. Also increases their damage potential, well, by double, because now they're making essentially two attacks and activation if you time this correctly, or if you play it, play around with it. But it also opens up the attachment options for them kind of immensely, because as I spoke about earlier, you still have the Stormcrow Lieutenant you can stick in here, which is going to give them plus one attack die, bringing them to eight attack dice on their highest rank, and Sundering. So that means if you shoot someone in the flank with Quickfire, that means they're going to hit Sundering and the minus one for the flank bonus. That's a minus two. That's going to chew through a lot of units. The other interesting alternative here is you stick Pip in with them, which allows them to make a 3-inch shift before their range attack, and then a 3-inch shift afterwards. So that means these guys can maneuver up 6 inches. They can activate Quickfire, shift another 3 inches, say to the side, getting further into that flank, and after they're done, move another 3 inches afterwards, effectively letting these guys march anytime they want to make a ranged attack. Now, with Swift Strike, it gets a little more complicated because what these guys will have to do in this case is they will use Swift Strike, they'll retreat, they'll back up to 6 inches to still stay in range of their short bows, and then you're going to be able to shoot. Pip is then going to allow you to get that 3-inch nimble maneuver afterwards, though, but it's still going to land you 9 inches away from the target. So on the average speed 6 infantry, that means they're going to have to roll 4 plus to come after you. And this is before you factor in any terrain or anything else that they might have to do. So, it's going to just make them just pinball, across the battlefield and be able to just really get deep dive into the enemy lines. Those are probably my two favorite attachments on there, but hell, you can always stick a watch captain in with them, and then you have, Horn that wakes the sleep. Oh my god. You have Horn. Sorry, not Horn. God, I even messed up, and it's not even the one I wanted to talk about. Sorry, Watcher on the Wall with these guys that you can help out with. You have the Sword in the Darkness that you can boost that Swift Strike and then still get the extra bits when you're doing your short bow quick fire. So you've got a nice amount of other options with these guys that you can absolutely just use to cause some chaos in the army. Yeah, it's expensive if you're sticking some of those attachments on there, like especially Pip making him a 10-point unit. But frankly, that unit's pretty terrifying when it does that. So, I believe it's well worth the investment and damage output that they're able to throw out there. So, in addition to that, though, just the raw utility. I mean, again, as I talked about, one of the other armies you can run is a wealth-focused army, and then you can run these guys here with Stormcrow Lieutenants across your army with, say, Peter Baelish to actually, switch out the spot and get the extra effects, and that opens up just a whole new list, especially playing with the conscripts. And as I mentioned earlier, the conscripts are in there to boost out numbers. But the Ranger Hunters here, that's just one of those units that I really like the versatility of. And especially when I'm running a Jor army, this is why at the start of the podcast here, I was kind of talking about Jor with them a bit, but I didn't want to get into any like heavy spoilers there or anything there. But since I've already talked about it, let's go ahead and just, drop that on there. You can stick Jor in this unit, and now they're stalwart. So that means that they're going to be sitting there with a 5 plus defense, 4 plus morale, which again, these guys shouldn't be seeing combat, so the 5 plus defense should really be coming into play. The things that are going to hurt them are things like, potentially crown zaps and things like that, but now, they're sitting at a 4 plus. But now getting those extra two vows that are always activated on these guys, that means that they can really get scary here for, not a huge investment sitting here at 8 points. You stick the fire that burns against the cold on these guys, and they're effectively doing the same job as trackers, but they're a lot more lethal. So now they can absolutely go in someone's flank. They can throw down a vulnerable token into the flank there, get their shots off, just absolutely hurt them with those range attacks. Or you can throw weakened down on there to make it so if you're going to get charged and you have a, you're going to, then you're going to be able to mitigate that. You can throw down panic, since you are shooting guys in the flank, you're giving them a minus one. You might as well stack that on top of that. Why not? You can stick Watcher on the Wall on these guys, and then they're going to move up to being speed 7 and get a free retreat action if they start the turn engaged, which is essentially like their, Swift Strike, except you're going to be able to retreat, you're going to be able to immediately trigger Quick Fire, you're going to be able to charge in, you're going to be able to Swift Strike, you're going to be able to retreat. Now, of course, Quick Fire is a order, so you're not going to be able to do it twice, but that's the potential right there to, just throw out a ton of attacks with that one option there. You can of course throw shields on there if you want to just defense them up and everything. But the point is that you're going to have just so many more tactical, flexible options, and that's again what I wanted to specify with Jor, and also the point of the overall Night's Watch updates is just, you're a toolbox army. You need to play it like that. Don't shoehorn yourself into forcing one specific playstyle and, thinking that, oh, this is the same thing I'm going to do every single game, because it's going to end up costing you things. Night's Watch have the capabilities to adapt to almost any situation and have a tool to handle that situation. So use those wisely and don't, just keep relying on the same strategy over and over again. That's probably the best piece of advice I can give you. And especially when you're playing Jor, because Jor is going to just open up so many tactical options, so many list building options and potential here, that you can really cater things to how you want to play. Now, again, I am a fan with Jor. He's going to have this big, hard, just, devastating unit that's just in the center of your army. I really like having whatever unit I pick to do that, and then going with two conscripts just to bulk out the rest of the army, because that's going to cover kind of my minimal activations that I have right there. It's going to give me, some fodder to go and throw around in case I need to get some flank bonuses or something. But beyond that, and that's just my personal core, is Jor, probably usually going to be an unit of Sworn Brothers, but depending on how I go, I might throw him in Ranger Hunters as well. But usually that, and then a couple of unit conscripts just to, just to give my foundation for my army. That's usually going to settle around 15 points or so, so I think that's a good solid way to look at it. And then you just cater things around your playstyle. You want to go offense, then you run some more Sworn Brothers, you want to go defense, throw in those veterans. You want to run the mobility thing that I was just talking about, double down on Ranger Hunters. And then it's just a matter of spattering out whatever NCUs you want to increase your offensive potential, and then throw those attachments in there as well. So guys, that's going to wrap it up here. Thank you for listening here, and that was our look at Jor. Next time, we are probably going to go north of the wall to continue our 1.5 look, and we will talk about some Free Folk tactics. So join me then. Happy New Year. Don't die.